The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And on a Monday morning, with the sounds of the Brad Sessmatt Orchestra in the background, good morning. Brad is not here. I am Jeff Munn, the radio play-by-play voice of Arizona State Women's Basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC, the hottest team in professional soccer, at least in this country at the moment, and the former radio voice, if there is some way to get the logo up there, of the Arizona Hotshots of the Alliance of American Football. Great to have you with us this morning. I probably do some other things that I can't think of right off the top of my head. But one of the things I like to do is come down and fill in for Brad on this show because it gives me a chance to talk a little sports. And isn't that a great thing to do, especially coming out of Father's Day weekend? So much to talk about. And for those of you who remember when Phoenix was a sleepy little desert town in the summer with nothing to talk about, hearty har har, we do not have that problem this morning. We'll have a plethora of guests and great guests today. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, is in the Dominican Republic working on a story concerning the recent shooting of Boston Red Sox legend David Ortiz. We'll discuss that, plus a whole bunch of things going on with the D-backs, and we'll talk about that in a second. But Pedro will go in depth with us on that subject coming up. Then our pal Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst. There was a little trade that crossed the wire on Saturday that Tim's got some thoughts about, and it does have an impact on the Suns' number six selection in the draft, and we'll talk about that. We'll also note the significance of this day in sports history. June 17th, 1994, it was a significant day. 25 years ago today, a number of things took place, the most notable of which was the Bronco chase involving O.J. Simpson. I was in the news media at the time as a news anchor at KTAR. It's a day that I'll never forget, for a variety of reasons, and it we'll go into it later on in the show. We are joined by way of the electronic e-cam. Up in the right-hand corner, we'll take Eric Sorensen to block. Assuming there he is, upper right-hand corner.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Mr. Munn.
How was your weekend?
It was good. It wasn't bad.
No. TCU didn't make Omaha, so
no.
Wasn't much for you to watch.
That's
there.
That's okay. That's okay.
What did you watch?
I have been watching a little bit of the College World Series.
Yes, so have I.
Which has been intriguing.
Yes.
I've been following the Diamondbacks, especially yesterday with the experiment.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get into that later.
Oh, we
but,
will.
Yeah, I've just been, got back from vacation, just trying to catch up on some stuff.
Watch any of the golf?
I didn't watch any golf.
I do have a thought about it, and if we have time, I'll squeeze it in, because as many people know, I've not been a fan of the way Fox has handled the U.S. Open since they got the rights. But if we have a little time later on, we'll get into that. But
and obviously, I was glued to the happenings on Saturday, late Saturday afternoon.
Oh, yes.
When ESPN alerted me 350,000 times that there was a big NBA trade. And for once, it really was.
I got an alert,
NBA
but
trade.
Just the trade itself. I never got anything else.
Well, I was watching the family, the ESPN family, and
they kept
pushing people to go to ESPN News
for the latest
for media
on
coverage
the trade.
Stay right here, because after this game ends, we're going to go right to SportsCenter. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Any time of day, any day of the week, it could happen. So, yes, it's good to have you with us, Eric, and I'm sure that we have lots for he and I to talk about as well. But let's get to the news of the day, and it's brought to you by Sagicor Now. Now, Brad doesn't have to be here to tell you all the great benefits of dealing with Sagicor. But I can speak to that behalf because I'm a father of two adult children. But when they were little, I had concerns about how they would be looked after if something happened to me. You can get those questions answered by just talking to Sagicor. Sagicor Now will give you all kinds of information on how to protect your family and do it in a way that's not going to be confusing or put a serious crimp in your lifestyle, your budget. So I hope you'll contact Sagicor Now, find out from them how easy it is to have peace of mind, and we thank Sagicor for their support. Where do we start? We start with the NBA trade, I guess, because the Lakers did indeed pick up center Anthony Davis from the New Orleans Pelicans Saturday. In return, the Pelicans get a package of players that includes Lonzo Ball, and oh boy, we'll get to that in a second, and the number four pick in Thursday's draft. The draft is Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, and Eric is nodding his head and says, yes, it's Thursday. This has an impact a little bit on the Suns' draft plans, and we'll discuss those with Tim Kempton coming up a little bit later on in the show. I am looking at NBADraft.net. They're one of those that do mock drafts, and we know that Morant's going to Memphis, Barrett from Duke is going to the Knicks, and the Pelicans will take Zion Williamson first. With the Lakers pick at 4, and I believe the Lakers have to make the pick because the trade cannot be made official until July 6th. But certainly the Pelicans will tell them, hey, take this guy. Right now, they're projected to take Darius Garland, a point guard from Vanderbilt, who had been until Saturday rumored to be to the Suns at 6. So now, what does NBA draft say the Suns are going to do at 6? They're supposed to take forward DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. We'll talk all about that with Tim Kempton coming up later on in the show. But the trade itself, our friend David Griffin, of course, is running basketball operations in New Orleans, and I think he came out of this in the best shape imaginable. He had a disgruntled player in Anthony Davis who had made it clear he didn't want to be there anymore. And so he trades him to the Lakers. Davis gets what he wants, the chance to play with LeBron James and go for a championship. The Pelicans get a significant amount of building blocks to start the process of rebuilding the organization. They get the first and fourth picks now in the draft. They get Lonzo Ball. And one of the things I want to talk to Tim about, I have not seen Lonzo Ball play much. I saw him a little bit in college. I have not seen him play much in the NBA. But a lot of people, and no less an expert than Doug Gottlieb of Fox Sports, was on Twitter this morning saying the Lakers are really going to regret trading Lonzo Ball. His dad has said the same thing. LeVar Ball was quoted moments after the trade, and I think his quote went, "I guarantee you the Lakers will never win another championship. Guarantee it. They will regret the day they traded Lonzo Ball." I just want to know, how good a player is Lonzo Ball? Is he really a guy that is a franchise changer by himself? We'll discuss that with Tim Kempton. The D-backs lose yesterday and lose big at Washington to the Nationals. Saturday it was announced that because there was a hole in the rotation with the injury to John Duplantier, that they would start Archie Bradley. And you know the story. I mean, Archie has had a lot of struggles coming out of the bullpen. And this was not one of those opener kind of deals. They said, we're going to stretch Archie out as long as he can go. It turned out he went an inning and a third, gave up 4 runs. Zach Godley had to come in and do mop-up duty and really essentially take one for the team. And I'm blanking on how many runs Washington ended up getting for the game, but it was double digits. I had so many things going on yesterday. Golf, and it was Father's Day. My kids kept insisting on celebrating Father's Day with me, which was great, but it diverted me from a lot of things. But I did look at the box score, and I saw Bradley win an inning and a third. We're going to talk with Pedro Gomez a little bit later on. And the question is now, I think, what does this team do with Archie Bradley? I mean, if they really are looking at him as a starting option, is the major leagues the place to stretch him out and to see what he can do? The final was 15-5, and again, it just an unfortunate situation. And Torey Lovullo said after the game, he has no idea what he's going to do the next time that spot comes up in the rotation. That he says, this is the very thing I'm going to spend a lot of my time thinking about the next couple of days. Zach Godley went 4 2/3, gave up 6 runs, 6 earned runs on 7 hits. Crichton came out of the bullpen, was tagged for 5 runs in an inning plus. It's not a good situation, and even though it was a very strong road trip, there's a lot of really interesting questions surrounding the Diamondbacks that need to get answered and need to get answered fairly soon. Some of the other little local notes that took place over the weekend, Rising won again. They beat Orange County SC. Just a tremendous performance again, a 3-0 win. Mercury lost Friday night to the LA Sparks, but it looks like Diana Taurasi is getting closer to coming back, and boy, she's needed as soon as possible. There's no question about that. And so there's a lot of things going on, a truckload of things involving a number of teams. And the Cardinals mini camps, I believe, have wrapped up for now, and they won't get back to duty until, or training or workouts until the actual training camp opens in Glendale. And how interesting is that going to be? Now, all of a sudden, you're going to have a camp that I think is going to be one of the most closely watched in the NFL because of Kyler Murray. And everybody you talk to who's been out there for the mini camp sessions just rave about what Kyler Murray, they think he's capable of doing. So other than that, there's nothing going on. just the same, we've got a lot to get to. And as the song goes, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. So we're going to take a break, come back. Pedro Gomez, ESPN insider. We'll talk about David Ortiz. This is we're getting an indication now of how dangerous a situation it can be down in the Caribbean nations for Major League Baseball players. And yes, we'll talk a lot of D-backs. Pedro Gomez from the Dominican Republic. Tim Kempton later on. We hope you'll stay with us throughout because it's going to be an interesting day here on the Brad Sesmatch Show on Sports360AZ.com. We got a ton of things going on in Major League Baseball, and one of them is this ongoing story involving Red Sox legend David Ortiz, and our friend ESPN Baseball Insider Pedro Gomez is actually in the Dominican Republic today working on a story regarding that. So first of all, Pedro, belated Happy Father's Day to you. And what
Thank you, Jeff.
You know, this story with Ortiz reminds us that for Major League Baseball players, and I don't care how successful they are, if they're in the major leagues in their home countries in the Caribbean, whether it's the Dominican, Puerto Rico, or what have you, they are targets because they become mega celebrities, right?
Well, I mean, they're targets anywhere because a lot of people understand they've made a lot of money in their life. So chances are pretty good that they're holding a pretty fat wad in their pocket at any time. But yeah, sure. It's disturbing. The problem with this one is that the Dominican people put anybody who reaches the major leagues on a pedestal down here. And if you're a superstar, the way David Ortiz was when he played, you reach legendary status. And that's the biggest reason that so many people down here are just dumbfounded over what happened and wondering if there's more to the story. And look, there are a lot of rumors out there, and Jeff, I'm not getting into that because they're unsubstantiated at this point, but anybody can go out and look, and it's disturbing. You know, possibly it was random, possibly it wasn't. Who knows? And we may never really get the truth on this. Who knows?
I know that he is back in Boston getting treatment, but I'm certain you're getting word there as to how that treatment is progressing.
Well, he's doing much better. He's apparently been able to get up and walk around a little bit. So that certainly is a positive sign, especially when you were shot in the lower back. I did an interview with the attending surgeon who took care of him here in Santo Domingo and said at no point did the bullet come close to his spinal cord, which, of course, could translate to paralysis. But it did go through the liver, and that's a very dangerous situation. But he did tell me that his vital signs during surgery were never at the point that, you know, that they were in danger of losing the patient, which is how he referred to it. So those are all positive signs. The fact that he was able to get on an air ambulance jet within 24 hours and be flown to Boston, where he's being treated at Massachusetts General Hospital, those are also positive signs, because if you're really in dire condition, they probably won't let you get on an air ambulance jet, no matter how, you know, no matter how, what high level of work they can do on a plane. It's not the same as being stable and on the ground.
That's a very good point. ESPN Baseball Insider Pedro Gomez joins us from the Dominican Republic. All right, let's get into baseball news as it pertains to the local team. And I want to start first, because it all kind of ties together, the Archie Bradley situation. The thing that I found perplexing about their decision to start Archie and say this is not an opener situation, it's not necessarily a bullpen game, we're going to go as far with him as we can. To me, that's something you do with a pitcher. If you want to stretch him into a starter, you send him down to the minors for a couple of starts to stretch him out. You don't do it at the major league level, and it also didn't work out very well. Pedro, I get the feeling that they just can't make up their mind on Archie Bradley on a lot of things. What is he? Do we keep him? They're just not certain what to do.
Jeff, I think you hit it on the head there, and it also speaks to how they're grasping at straws in terms of their rotation. Look, Mike Hazen is in his third year with the ball club. And the first year, they reached the postseason. Last year, they were in contention into September. Don't forget, they were in first place on September 1st a year ago. So it kind of tied Hazen's hand in terms of, we can't tear this thing down because the team is in contention. Right now, they sit almost five games back of the second wild card spot. So there's a handful of teams separating them from that second wild card spot. And look, the way the rotation has looked, 1 through 5, it's going to be hard to see the Diamondbacks remaining in contention for a postseason spot. So now I think what Hazen is doing is he's going to evaluate everybody. And I'm told that anybody on the Diamondbacks roster right now is available via trade, just about anybody. Certainly, you know, they would think hard and twice about a guy like Ketel Marte or Edwin Escobar. But really, for the most part, there are few untouchables on this roster. And that's kind of what one of the reasons Hazen was brought here, that they believed he was a guy that would be able to reshape this roster and have them in contention in a few years. The problem that got in the way is they were in contention the first 2 years of Hazen being here. So it really hamstrung what he was able to do in terms of reshaping the roster and the organization. But at this point, nothing would surprise me in terms of a move. We still have about 6 weeks before the July 31st trade deadline. And I would think the Diamondbacks probably will be active, especially if things don't... And you look, they had a really successful East Coast swing here going 7-3. Those are the types of things that kind of tie your hands if you're a GM in terms of making moves.
You're right, and that was going to lead to my next question. I want to get to the persistent rumors about Zach Greinke in a second, but that kind of road trip almost works against you if you're Mike Hazen, because we both know, Pedro, that he's got bosses that are still very much scared of saying we're rebuilding for fear that the bottom will fall out attendance-wise. And so they go on a road trip like that. How much sway does he have with Derek Hall and Ken Kendrick to convince them even now, this is just kind of fool's gold, we're really not going to stay in this, and we can't go out and be buyers at the deadline?
Well, that's one of the reasons that Mike Hazen was hired. So if they're going to hire him and listen to him, they're going to have to follow what he thinks is best overall health of the organization. And if that means, you know, short-term losses at the gate, well, that's what a lot of clubs have had to endure in order to turn things around. You know, you certainly look at the Astros, you know, as well as 5-6 years ago, they were losing over 100 games a year regularly, and now they're arguably the best team in baseball. So sometimes you do have to, unfortunately, you know, swallow hard and just say, look, we're gonna struggle a little bit here, but in the long run, we will be better off. Now, it's up to Ken Kendrick and Derek Hall and the powers that be to sign off on that and say, okay, we trust you. That's why we hired you. Have at it. Do what you think is best.
And I think Houston is the absolute prime example of why you have to go that path sometimes. The Cubs are too, to a certain degree, but their attendance, you knew it was never going to collapse. Let me talk about the Greinke trades, and I get really frustrated with a lot of reports that are coming out of here through various outlets that just throw up the rumor du jour about Greinke, and they never take into account two things: the contract and... This is a guy, this is the part that never gets mentioned. This is a guy that doesn't want to be in the spotlight. So this rumor that he would go to the Yankees, and I think the Encarnacion trade, by the way, rules that out, because I think the Yankees are now going to try to put a package together to go after Bumgarner. But just all things being equal, Greinke doesn't want to go to a major market, doesn't want to be in the spotlight. the D-backs are never going to be able to make a trade where they get prospects and payroll relief. I almost think it's almost time for Ken Kendrick to look in the mirror and say, look, we took a gamble. We thought this guy would get us to a World Series. It's not going to happen, and we're just going to have to live out the deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one option. Another option is to do kind of, you know, Seattle just did it with Edwin Encarnacion. Look, he is owed almost $17 million on his deal guaranteed right now, and the Mariners are eating more than half of that. Now, granted, it's not $88 million like Greinke is owed right now till the end of his deal. He's got $70 million the next two seasons and about $18 million left this season. So the money certainly is an obstacle. And the problem with it is that, and I remember front office people telling me this when they signed him, you can never put one-third of your total payroll into one player. And that includes even if you're the Dodgers and have a $220 million payroll. You just can't do it. It ties your hands when it comes to everything else. And that's kind of what the D-backs have experienced since they signed Greinke. So you're right. They may have to just suck it up. Although they could also look at it and say, look, we owe $88 million. We're on the hook for that. If we pay 40 of it, someone will probably be willing to take him, and we could probably get a little bit better prospect, which is why the Mariners were able to get Juan Fenn from the Yankees in the Encarnacion deal, who's considered a very, very good prospect. Now, he's young. He's only 19 or 20 years old. He has yet to pitch above the A level, but there are a lot of scouts that think he has what it takes to become an everyday front end starter in the major league. So that's why they were willing to pay more than half of Encarnacion's salary. So if the D-backs are willing to do something like that, they certainly could get a better prospect or two for Greinke. If they're not, then the prospect is not going to be nearly as good.
I would agree. I've got 60 seconds, and we're with Pedro Gomez, who joins us from the Dominican. And I hate to ask this and ask you to do this in a minute, but we're going to try it. Big picture. Mickey Callaway with the Mets, Dave Martinez with the Nationals are both supposedly days away from losing their jobs. Do you expect that to happen soon, if at all? And if they make a move, either one of those teams, is Joe Girardi going to pop up in either one of those locations?
I think there's a very good chance Joe Girardi would pop up, especially in Queens. It would kind of be a thumb into the eye of the Yankees, which the Mets are always happy to do because he did play and manage the Yankees, play as a World Series champion and then manage them to a World Series title. So that absolutely, you can see that scenario playing out. And in terms of Callaway and Martinez, look, they've been given ample opportunity and the results just haven't been there. So it wouldn't be surprising for either of them to find the pink slip in their mailbox at any moment.
I would agree. Pedro, I appreciate it. Wish we had more time. Lots to talk about. Safe travels, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Okay, Jeff. Take care.
You too. Pedro Gomez, nice enough to join us from the Dominican Republic today to talk about all that's going on in baseball. And he's right. There just isn't a scenario where the D-backs can trade Zach Greinke and get prospects and payroll relief. It's going to have to be one or the other. And I'm going to say this again. I said this the last time I hosted this show. The Arizona Republic has got to stop writing these stories that make it sound like that the D-backs are playing Strat-O-Matic. You can't just call somebody and trade Zach Greinke. There's way more to it than that, and they ought to be responsible enough to write it that way. Tim Kempton talks NBA drafts and trades next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Back on the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Monday. I love coming in to do the show, and I always love it when I get a chance to talk basketball with my pal Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, and he's nice enough to join us for a few minutes this morning. I would suspect, TK, you weren't surprised that Anthony Davis got traded to the Lakers, right?
No, not at all. It was the price tag. He wanted to go there. No one else really wanted to jump in and be an Anthony Davis suitor. His agent Rich Paul was very vocal in telling other people that he wouldn't go there and sign extended contracts. So that I'm sure backed quite a few other teams off that we didn't even hear about. So it seemed like he wanted to go to the Lakers, and it was just a matter of the Lakers and the Pelicans putting a deal together to get it done.
I'll tell you what, that's you hit on something I think that's really important in this. I think David Griffin came out of this thing in pretty good shape. When you've got a disgruntled player who's real specific about where he wants to go, it really cuts down the GM or the basketball operation guy's leverage to get the right kind of deal. And I think he came out of this in really good shape. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. You know, obviously, the proof's in the pudding and the long range. They're young players. The draft picks that they got are going to be young guys. A lot of talent, not a lot of NBA experience, not a lot of understanding how to win. A little bit of a circus around everything. Obviously, you start with Zion Williamson and everything that's going to come along with him being the number one pick. Lonzo Ball being there. I think that's a good thing for him professionally as a player. Brandon Ingram, I don't think he's going to be too happy there. So that may be a short-term existence. But the three draft picks, now they have the first and the fourth pick in this draft. And they got rid of Anthony Davis. They got, you know, Drew Holiday is a phenomenal, I believe, underrated player in New Orleans already. Alvin Gentry's got his hands full trying to make this situation work, because, as you know, Muddy, the expectations now with Zion Williamson and everything that's going on this summer are going to be inflated, and Alvin Gentry has got to temper that with trying to develop all these young players.
You know, you just hit on something, and I want to get to it in a second. We're talking with Suns radio analyst Tim Kempton. I have to ask this question. It's really a kind of a simplistic, silly question, but I haven't seen much of Lonzo Ball. I saw him in college, but I haven't seen a lot of him at the NBA level. How good can he be?
Well, no one's seen him that much at the NBA level. He's also had injury problems along with, you know, everything that's gone on with his dad and the roster moves in L.A. But here's what we know about him. He's big. He's strong. He can get to the rim. He's got very good court vision. He plays with pace. He can get up and down. He does a very nice job on the defensive end of the floor with his size and his quickness. The big question for Lonzo Ball is his outside scoring ability, because he can also get to the rim and finish. So that's the biggest unknown with him, is how do you fit him in today's day and age of the three-point line being so important, and is that enough of a drawback with his you know, lack of ability to score from the three-point line, or does everything else I just said make up and you're able to keep him on the floor because he does so many other things at an above average level?
The one thing I wanted to add to that, and I want to get to the Suns too in a minute, I think now with what New Orleans has got, what they're going to get out of the draft, the most important guy in that organization now, and you just touched on it, is Alvin Gentry, because I think with a team that is going to be as young as New Orleans is going to be, you really need an experienced veteran coach to guide these players along. And we all know, you and I both know, a lot of people here know how good a teacher Alvin Gentry is. I think now he really becomes, if not the most important, one of the most important assets the Pelicans have.
Without a doubt. You need three things to be successful. You need ownership, front office, and coaching staff all on the same page. With David Griffin being there now, having worked with Alvin here in Phoenix before, I think they're on a very good, comfortable level. And we've seen what their ownership group is. They've given David Griffin a lot of power. We saw what he did in coming and getting Aaron Nelson to go there. They've given David Griffin a lot of leeway, a lot of power in that regard. So it looks like all three necessary things are in line in New Orleans. Now, again, you just have to temper those expectations because of the inexperience of the youth that is going to be on that team. There'll be talent, but they're not contending for an NBA championship right away. And nice thing about it, it's New Orleans. It's not New York. It's not Chicago. It's not L.A. So I don't think you'll have, you know, a fan base that's out of whack a little bit. But still, I'm sure there's going to be some expectations that they have to deal with as well.
All right, let's turn to the Suns. I looked at right after the draft Saturday afternoon, I started looking at mock drafts on the web, and they hadn't really reacted to New Orleans getting the fourth pick, and they still had Darius Garland, a lot of them, going to the Suns, Garland being a guard out of Vanderbilt. Now this morning, NBA DraftNet has the Suns taking DeAndre Hunter, forward from Virginia at number six. I guess the question I have now is, in your mind, does this change the Suns' thinking regarding a potential trade of that pick at all?
I don't think so. I think it's still the only difference you throw in now is now the Lakers, with those two picks, that they can go an entirely different direction than all these mock draft people thought. I mean, New Orleans having two picks,
right,
in an entirely different direction. They could be looking at someone completely different than the Lakers were. So, yeah, there could be one or two guys different available than you expected before. But, no, I don't think so. I think the Suns still have their plan in what they're looking at. You know, it may change because the Pelicans take a player that they like at number four. But I think, you know, with Monty Williams as the head coach, understanding what goes on, Jeff Bowers being there alongside of James Jones with his experience of being in a ton of draft rooms, I think they'll be prepared for whatever happens come draft night on Thursday.
Let me. We're with Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst. I got about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left. Let's go back and revisit the finals on this one subject. I watched most of Game 7, or Game, what was it? It was Game 6. I can count. It was Game 6 the other night at Oracle. And the next day, I started to hear people whispering about, boy, Steph Curry, you really can't let him shoot the ball in the last 2 minutes of the game. He's not that clutch a performer in big-time situations. And I'm like, are they really talking about Steph Curry? I don't know where these people are getting this idea that the Golden State dynasty is over. They were in the finals. If they get beat in the first round, fine, the dynasty's over.
Yeah, exactly. No, the situation is just like anybody. When all you have to worry about is one guy, it's a heck of a lot easier to play defense, you know, against one guy as opposed to two or three. So, that's just, you know, the quick snap judgment. He missed one shot when they possibly really needed it. But, no, I'll take Steph. If Golden State doesn't want him, I'll take him on the Suns roster. But,
yeah.
No, it was a crazy series. Obviously, when you lose two great players like Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson with, you know, devastating injuries, not just, you know, tweak an ankle, they'll be back in a couple of weeks. Both those guys are done for next year.
Yeah,
they're sitting out entire years because of catastrophic injuries. No, I think it was just snap judgment. You know, Money, you and I both know these guys want attention. And I'm talking about the sports writers and and everybody else in social media today. They want attention, so they say the most ridiculous thing to get it. And you know, a week from now, no one even will remember it.
That's true. You're right on both counts. They say outrageous things, and nobody remembers it a week after it's said. So, all right. Well, the draft is Thursday night. We'll see how everything unfolds. I do have a little bit of time here. How bad is Notre Dame going to beat up on Louisville in the football opener this year?
I hope it's like, you know, like women's national soccer team. Beat them 72-0 if you can. Hey, how about that? I mean, this is big girl soccer. This is the World Cup. If you can beat them 20-0, you beat them. I understand, you know, all the hoot and hollering about it, but I don't get where people are upset about that. This is the World Cup. You're supposed to put your best foot forward.
Right.
And it's not up to the women's national team to stop scoring goals. It's on the other team to do that.
Didn't Jimmy Johnson say that when he coached the Cowboys? If you don't like us running us up, stop us.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, I get it. I mean, they were celebrating after every goal, but it is the World Cup. TK, I appreciate it, brother. Enjoy the draft on Thursday. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, see you soon, buddy. Thanks for having me.
You got it, pal. Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst. He's the best. Love him. This is a significant day in American history and in sports history. I want to talk about that in our final segment. And, yeah, I'm going to give a review of Fox's performance at the U.S. Open. And if you're with the Fox Network, don't worry. It's not going to be that bad. We'll get to it after this break on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Sports360AZ.com. We are back on June 17th, 2019. I'm Jeff Munn filling in for Brad. I don't know if I've said that at any other time besides the first segment today. Might be good to put out. Oh, there it is. Jeff Munn at Moneyball. Do you know how many people tell me how lucky I am to have that Twitter handle, that if I gave it up, the fights that would go on to get that Twitter? I didn't know that. In any event, June 17th, and I want to get Eric Sorensen in on this. I'm a news anchor at KTAR. I was not on duty that evening, that particular evening that history took, in some ways, a rather bizarre turn. And, Eric, were you at KTAR by then?
No, I was still in college.
Okay.
But I think it was right before I started.
The event we're talking about is O.J. Simpson, whose wife and a friend of his wife were murdered, I think it was 3 days prior or 4 days prior. It was Monday of that week that the bodies were discovered. And just a quick story about that. I'm a news anchor at KTAR. We're a CBS radio affiliate in addition to ABC at the time. And CBS would send us a list of stories that they would feed out as news reports. And one of them is just a very little line says, wife of O.J. Simpson found murdered. And I just looked at it and thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Well, obviously, it grew into something much larger than that. It took a couple of days for investigators to determine that O.J. Simpson was a prime suspect in these crimes. And he was the morning of the 17th. They went to arrest him, could not find him, and had to announce to the world that O.J. Simpson was a fugitive from justice. Somewhere around, I believe, 5:30 our time, as Game 5 of the NBA Finals was taking place, O.J. Simpson had been found traveling in a white Bronco being driven by his friend Al Cowlings, and this is the video of that drive. And we'll talk about NBC in a second, but this became the most famous. You know, L.A. TV stations do this all the time. Somebody's trying to elude authorities, and they pick up video of the vehicle traveling down freeways and side streets. This one gang is the most famous of all time. There will never be another one that will equal the attention this one got. And they had footage of, oh, Larry King, O.J. Simpson, hello. They had footage of, or they've had audio footage of conversations between Detective Tom Lang and O.J. Simpson. And at one point, it was feared that O.J. Simpson was going to take his own life in the back of the Bronco. And you want to talk about the height of tension. Poor NBC is in the middle of showing Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and they had no choice. I think for a time they went split screen on the basketball game and the chase.
They did.
And finally, I think at some point they just abandoned the basketball game. This is secondary
channel.
Right. They had no place NBC. Else to put the game. And so they had to go to the chase. Eventually, Cowlings drives back to O.J. Simpson's home, where after a period of time where O.J. can gather some belongings or what have you, he does surrender himself to police custody. And if you were around at that point, you know what the story. Look at that, the crowds on the bridges.
It's still incredible. I mean,
everybody knew at that point.
This video money, 25 years later, is still fascinating to me.
It is.
And this, some people say, was the start of reality TV. Some people look at this
chase as the
start of a whole generation of television.
I would tend to agree with you. The strategy all along, and you'll notice the cars, the police vehicles are staying slowly behind the vehicle, and they're not trying to make a move on OJ because they don't want to, at this point, they think he's got a gun to his head in the back of this Bronco. And they don't want to do something to just make him panic and take his own life. And this was the perfect storm in terms of celebrity, major crime.
Sports.
Everything you could think of that would make something salacious would just all came together at once. And it captivated this nation for a period of a year and a half through the resolution of the criminal trial. Of course, there was a civil trial that followed. You no doubt know that in the criminal trial, he was found not guilty. And a lot of the not guilty was surrounding the lack of thorough work by L.A. police investigators, errors that were made, what have you. But it was a period of time that just exceeds all bounds of reality. As Eric mentioned, it was the beginning of reality TV, but there was very little of it through that period that was real. And I'll just say this, and I got to move on because I want to talk about the U.S. Open. The day of the verdict in the trial in Los Angeles, our friend Jeff Scott assigned me to be at Tom's Tavern downtown, a well-known downtown eatery, to get reaction of people when the verdict was read. And it was read at about 10 o'clock in the morning. It was an October day in 1995. I honestly can tell you, I don't have vivid memories of the day John Kennedy was assassinated. But the morning at that particular moment the verdict was read, it was as close as you could possibly feel to the world coming to a complete stop.
And you can you imagine if social media was around
the
mid-90s?
Would have blown up. What a day. The Rangers had a Stanley Cup parade that day. The U.S. Women's National Soccer Team was playing in the World Cup. Quick thought about the U.S. Open, because this comes up every year that Fox has televised the U.S. Open. I thought they did better with their coverage this year. It wasn't perfect, but it's better than it was when they started several years ago. And I thought one of the highlights of the weekend was when they brought Jim Nance into the tower to visit with Joe Buck and Paul Azinger. Kudos to CBS and to Fox for allowing that to happen. And because Jim Nance lives at Pebble Beach, knows the course very well, I'm fiddling around with this earpiece, I'm just going to take it out. He knows the layout of Pebble Beach very well, but I thought it was a really classy move by both CBS and Fox to allow Jim Nance to come on. And what star power, Joe Buck and Jim Nance, two lead NFL announcers, talking golf. It was just a magic moment that I wish could have gone on for longer than 5 minutes. Some things Fox did not get right. This ball tracker thing did not work on every hole, and my feeling is if it isn't going to work on every hole, don't do it at all. And they shouldn't have done it at all. Some things they got better at. Visually, the shots they got from Pebble Beach, that's pretty hard to mess up. But here's the thing with Fox and the U.S. Open. It's the only golf events, the USGA, U.S. Open, Senior Open, and Women's Open, it's the only three golf things Fox does all year. And if that's all you're going to do, you're going to make mistakes. A lot of people don't like the way TBS handles the baseball playoffs. Well, they don't do that much baseball anymore. They do a Sunday game of the week for like 6 weeks. That's, you know, you're going to make mistakes. And if I was going to advise Fox to anything, it's that get in the golf business. If you really want to do a good job on the U.S. Open, you've got to do some golf events to work the bugs out before the U.S. Open. Otherwise, you're going to continually have critics and make mistakes. So there is that. Stick with this here website, sports360az.com, because you're going to get the latest. There's a whole lot of things going on with recruit signing at ASU, high school news. You know, it's the off season, but we've got lots going on at the high schools. Boy, what a truckload of news that has come out about high school football in the last couple weeks. You'll get every bit of it if you stay right at this website. And we appreciate you being with us today on the Brad Sesmatt Show. We'll see you tomorrow.